Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
Our reading this morning is a piece by Clint Margrove. The title is, To the Student Who Asked Why He Earned a C on an Essay About Love. Because love has its own grammar. Its own sentences, some that run on too long and others that are just fragments. It uses a language not always appropriate or too informal, and it often lacks clarity. Love is punctuated all wrong, changes tenses abruptly, relies heavily on the first person, can be redundant, awkward, and full of unnecessary repetition. Every word is compounded, every phrase transitional. Love doesn't always know the difference between lie and lay. Its introductions sometimes lack a well-developed thesis, its claims go unfounded, its ad hominems attack call in question its authority. With a style that's inconsistent, a voice either too critical or too passive, love is a rough draft. In constant need of revision, whose conclusion rarely gives any sense of closure or reveals the lingering possibilities of a topic that always expects high praise and more often than not fails to be anything other than average. Here ends the reading. All right. Let me tell you a story. It is a cool day in late 2020, one of those blips where we thought COVID might be over, you know? I'm out for a walk with my then fiance, now wife, Laura, when my phone rings and my brother's name comes up on the screen. My brother and I, at this point in late 2020, have a somewhat shaky history of phone call conversations. We keep it civil about 75% of the time. So Laura and I have one of those eye contact conversations and nod before I pick up. So we exchange greetings and a little bit of small talk before my brother broaches the question he called me to ask. He says, hey, so what's a dead name? I didn't think he knew that word. So I stall and ask, why do you need to know? Because what's-her-face is yelling at mom about your dead name. My mother named me Nathaniel. But that's not the first name I had. Nathaniel is a gift that she gave me when I was about 20, and I told her that I wanted to move through the world as her son instead of her daughter. So I don't use my old name anymore, but I've never used the word dead name around my family. And as far as I know, I'm the only trans person they'd spent time with at that point, so it never occurred to me that they might encounter it on their own. So, my brother goes on to explain that our mom was having dinner with an old friend of hers, because remember, we thought COVID was over for a second there, and told a story about me when I was a kid. She used my old name to talk about me as a child, because that was my name when the story took place. And in comes the 20-something daughter of my mom's friend, and she snaps at both of our mothers for dead-naming me. And that was the first time my mother had ever heard that term. My mom mentioned this to my brother, so my brother was feeling protective of our mother and was calling me to get confirmation that the 20-something daughter of our mom's friend was being a melodramatic virtue signaler who yelled at our mom for no reason. I don't talk about being trans in all contexts. None of my coworkers at any job I had between 2018 and 2024 had any idea. New friends I make go through a vetting process of sorts before I tell them. And deciding to out myself at the pulpit when I started preaching a few years ago was something I considered very carefully before going through with it. I'm not even a little bit ashamed of who or what I am. No, I love being trans. I love my name. I love my body. I love just existing at home with the person I love most and forgetting that anyone might think there's something odd about the life we live together. The reason I don't always disclose my trans history is that when I do, it tends to create a language barrier. See, anybody who has ever learned a language knows that you don't start with complex sentences. You start by learning a small handful of common words and maybe practicing your pronunciation. Hola, ¿cómo estás? Muy bien. Eventually, if you keep learning, you get to speaking in full sentences and you realize that you weren't even using those first few words correctly because the context changes how words work, but your teacher never told you that because they didn't want to scare you off. So see, I am fluent in trans talk. I can chat about passing or stealthing or cracking your egg or boy moding or dead naming or clocking your tea all day long. The inside jokes that circulate among queer millennials are my mother tongue. Most people are not fluent in trans talk. Most people have only recently started learning, and they're still figuring out how those first few words work in context. So despite the very best of intentions, new people that I tell about my history typically don't know how to talk about my transition without saying something that just sounds off to a practiced ear. If I want to tell someone about who I am, first I have to prepare myself to have a conversation, more often a lot of conversations, with someone who doesn't speak the language very well. So because I am fluent in trans topics, I know that the young woman who snapped at my mother was rude, but ultimately correct. The word dead name refers to any name that a person has stopped using for themselves. You're never supposed to say a person's dead name, even if you knew them by that name before. Because use of the old name is a violation of that person's privacy. Proper etiquette is to use the person's current name retroactively. So you would say, when Nathaniel was a little kid, he would eat the leaves off trees because he thought it was the same thing as lettuce. True story. The term dead name means a name that is dead. No longer in circulation. It's like dead currency. But it also speaks to the lived experience of many trans people who, in the eyes of their family of origin, died when they came out. And another, more chilling interpretation of that term is that we call it a dead name because that is what people will call you if you die and aren't there to correct them anymore. It's the name that most trans people who have ever died have on their tombstones. So I have never used the word dead name in front of my family, because it took a while for us all to really understand that my transition was not the death of someone they loved. And I don't want to undo any of that progress for the sake of a vocabulary lesson. I would have preferred to save that lesson for some time down the road when we're all a little closer to being on the same page. But my brother learned what dead naming was anyway. And right now, it's 2020, and we're talking on the phone, and his only context for this new piece of vocabulary is that someone used it to hurt his mom's feelings. It is not an ideal learning opportunity. If I launch into a history about the term and its history, it sounds like I am taking the side of an acquaintance over our mother, which will most certainly not put my brother in the mood for some deep listening and reflection. If I brush off the question and tell him that I don't use the word dead name, but don't give him any explanation as to why, he's going to walk away thinking that deadnaming is a made-up word that oversensitive young liberals use to feel persecuted and self-righteous. And I will have betrayed the dignity of my own people. Now, this is not the first time I have tried to explain some aspect of my life to my brother under less than ideal circumstances. It doesn't always end well. Over the years, we have hung up on each other, stormed out of rooms, and ruined the mood of many a pleasant gathering. Growing up, we never really knew how to talk to each other. My brother learns by doing, and he hates being lectured, especially by his snot-nosed little sibling. And I am a recovering know-it-all, and I talk a lot when I get going. The influx of new stuff that my transition brought into our lives exacerbated a language barrier that was already there. But to his immense credit, my brother has never stopped trying. So our phone conversation in 2020 doesn't go entirely smoothly. I try to tell him what a dead name is without getting too deep in the weeds, and he thinks it's overkill and it sounds like it means someone is dead. And he's still mad that the young woman snapping at our mother seems to think that she knows more about me than her own family. And I'm not really in the mood to argue that in this particular moment she kind of does. I try to tell him about why the word dead name makes a lot of sense for a lot of other trans people. Because a lot of other trans people are dead to their families, or worse, actually dead, and only remembered by a name that wasn't theirs. And then my brother said something that surprised me. He said one of the rarest and kindest phrases in the English language. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. There are people that I really can't communicate with, even if they know all the right words. To some people, my life and the way I live it is something evil. And that's not a language barrier, that is a closed door. I can't make anyone do something they don't want to do. So if someone has no interest in recognizing my humanity, that's the end of the road until they change their mind. My brother is not one of those people. He does not hate trans people. He doesn't think we're something other than human beings. He doesn't think I'm crazy or lying. He doesn't always get what's going on with me, which is fair, neither do I. But he is always trying. He called me on a cold day in 2020 because he heard a new word that someone used to scold his mom. And he didn't make up his mind right away. that matters. That's why we still have a relationship. That's why now I call him when I have a bad day and I need to talk. That's why my favorite days are the ones I get to spend with his kids. My brother has learned for me, and that is all the proof I could want that he loves me, even when it's hard. So there are a lot of contexts where I don't talk about being trans because communicating across a language barrier is hard. And I don't always have the energy to navigate those conversations with grace. I know that I'm very lucky, though, because almost everyone I have ever come out to wants to be kind to me if I give them a chance. However unfamiliar they are with people like me, they want to try to learn. If you spend a lot of time on the internet or watching the news, I think it's easy to get the impression that the world is full of enemies. There's a lot of money to be made by reassuring people that they don't need to do the hard work of learning about someone else. There's also a lot of money to be made in selling the image of an ignorant straw man who can be safely written off and left behind. We are not encouraged to see each other as we actually are, as tangled messes of inherited biases and dubious information and good intentions. When I first came out as trans, I was 20 and I was terrified. And I was scared that if I let anybody else know that I was terrified and overwhelmed, they would try to stop me from transitioning. So I did what 20-year-olds do best. I acted like I knew everything already. And to fuel the act, I spent hours digging through whatever information I could find online, which means that I have sorted through hundreds of pages of comments calling trans people perverts, groomers, predators, cultists, delusional ideologues, fringe radicals bent on destroying the American family, and plenty of other things that do not bear repeating in a church. A lot of that stuff was written by far-right conservative commentators, but a lot of it came from places I did not expect. It came from feminists and gay people and school guidance counselors. And for some reason, the author of Harry Potter came from people whom I thought would be on my side. So I spent a long time with my guard up 24/7, and that made it harder to talk to people who meant well. My grandparents would ask a question, and I would hear an accusation. I would try to explain something important to me, and I'm pretty sure my poor mother heard really fast, agitated gibberish. I don't begrudge myself the mistakes I made. I was young and scared and trying my best. I don't begrudge my family their learning process either. They were also trying their best to understand what was going on with someone they loved with much less reliable information to go on. None of us really did anything wrong. It was just hard. My brother calls this time period our growing pains. It definitely sucked, but we all kept doing our best, and it got better. It got a lot better. It got better than it ever was before. There is a unique grace that arises between people who make an honest effort to understand each other. Reaching across the chasm of confusion to reach the human being on the other side is exhausting, and it is confusing. And it is often painful. And underneath all of those things that are true, there is a love which says, you are worth this to me. The people who learn for us are the ones who have proven that they love us through the hard parts. They love us when love means work. And when we do the same and push through the growing pains to learn for other people, we prove that love is more powerful than ignorance. If we are willing and able to put in some effort, we do not have to be driven apart from each other. To wrap it up, consider the biblical story of the Tower of Babel. The story tells that in a distant, mythical past, when all people spoke one language, the people of the world decided to build a tower so high that it reached God in heaven. They wanted to see what he was up to up there. The story goes that God looked down on all the people speaking to each other in a language that they all understood and got nervous, believing that they would surpass him. God said, "Look, they are one people and they have all one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose will now be impossible for them." See, that's why God smashed the tower and caused different people to speak in different languages. It was to stop us from overshadowing him, per the Old Testament. Good communication, engaged in by a whole community, is powerful enough to make God jealous. So in the interim, when we are still learning and still struggling to be understood, I think it's worthwhile to make the most of the things we do know how to say. My family and I do not always know how to have an in-depth conversation, but we know how to say that we love each other. Personally, I think that if all you know how to tell someone is that you love them, that is a really good start. In the words of Reverend Mike Moran, "Friends, be humble, for you are of the earth. Be noble, for you have come from the stars. And be kind, for you belong to each other." The service ends when the service begins. No, other way. The service begins when the service ends. Amen.
Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.